Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm Kerry.
Welcome, guys, back to the Game Junkies podcast.
So today's episode is a little different because Matt decided he couldn't get out of bed this morning. So it's just me and Kerry today.
And so that's what we're telling them, is it?
We don't really need to tell them that he's on a secret CIA mission. Oh, shit. Shouldn't have said that.
Good point. Whoops.
Anyway, continuing on. Obviously, we needed a topic and I thought we should talk about something that Matt's not very good at. And what a perfect topic to talk about than Pokemon. God, I'm just going to absolutely roast Matt this entire episode. I'm sorry, Matt.
I say that's a bit of a yikes out of 10 comment.
Yeah, so the idea of today is, obviously, this is going to be completely our opinions. So not too much hate, because I know last time we didn't include Gengar, Chad lost his shit with us.
Shout out to Gengar.
So what we're going to do today is we're going to take the mainline Pokemon regions and the mainline games and rate them on our opinion, and whoever has the highest rating, like combined, wins and is arguably the best region, and worse for the lowest rating, obviously.
I should probably get some paper then, shouldn't I?
I'm going to write this all down on my phone. So, obviously, it's only fair to do oldest to newest. And I don't actually know a great deal about the first two regions. So, Kerry, give us a bit of description on Kanto and the first mainline games for Kanto.
Ah, Kanto. Pokemon Red and Blue. Or I believe Red and Green, if you're in Japan. It's a bit of a difference that I never really understood, but who am I to question it? Everybody who's ever picked up a Pokemon game knows who the starters are for this one, of course.
Obviously, you got Charmander, who is obligatory, everyone's favourite. You got Squirtle, who's my favourite. And then you got Bulbasaur, and unfortunately the one that no one really ever picked, despite him being all right.
I mean, when he got to Venusaur, he was pretty good. I had quite a tanky one on one playthrough. But yeah, Charmander was always my number one pick. It's a bit hard to go off of this one without just diving straight into everything and looking at it all with nostalgia glasses, for lack of better terms.
Yeah, trying to keep the nostalgia out of it in the sense that, well, yes and no. I suppose you can have nostalgia because it does... Nostalgia really does add to the enjoyment, I find, when you revisit something like this.
It's true, but when you're looking purely through the lens of nostalgia, it's hard to stay objective.
Yeah, that is true. So the way we will rate this is on the Pokemon released with this, the difficulty of the game, like the battles and the puzzles and stuff, and also the story, whether the mainline story was any good. So we'll start with the Pokemon, because that's the easiest way to go about it. In Gen 1, just straight up blows out of the park for the Pokemon they had. Charizard, Rhyhorn, Beedrill, don't hate on Beedrill.
Alakazam.
You
too. You talk with Alakazam. If you had no friends, you couldn't get Alakazam.
Onyx.
Gengar.
Chad, you can see them now. Yeah, it had some fantastic Pokemon. And to be fair, considering it was obviously the first game, the possibilities were endless for what Pokemon they could have. I noticed we forgot to mention Dragonite as well.
And Gyarados. Kabutops was...
Aerodactyl.
Arcanine.
Dragonstar. And Arcanine. So the Pokemon is solid. As for the story itself,
that's, now that I'm thinking back on it, I'm pretty sure the only overarching real stories were gotta catch them all and stop Team Rocket, they're kind of jerks.
So, in comparison to the later games, it really is basic, to say the least.
Bearing in mind, though, it was kind of revolutionary for its time.
Black and white in ear-bleeding hyperbeams.
Oh, yeah. Hang on a moment. According to a quick Google search, Red and Blue were released on the 28th of September, 1998. Isn't that the year you were born?
Yes, 1998 was the year I was born. So they came out before I did.
Yeah, a few months. That's kind of odd to think about.
It just goes to show how popular these games are in general, to be fair. I mean, the amount of players that you have now probably dwarfs the amount it had back in the day. Which, to be fair, back in the day, gaming was a child's thing. Now it's everyone's thing, in opinions.
Do you think when they first released these games, they thought it would ever grow to the scale that it has?
Probably not. A lot of places in a lot of games, they don't make it to the levels of this older stuff, do they?
No,
a lot of games these days, within 3 months, 6 months tops, you don't hear about them anymore, do you?
No, not there's, really.
There's a few games that have remained relevant. The Witcher 3 is basically sort of dead now, but people still talk about it all the time. And it's got a general popularity to it. GTA still really talked about and is like 8 years running at this point.
Would the Elder Scrolls games fit into that category?
Yep. Skyrim is, despite the fact that everyone hates on it, it's getting another port to the newer consoles, so clearly it's still going strong. And then you got Pokemon, which came out in 1998, and is still having new games made and remakes made. So it's clear that it'll never be a dead game.
I think that was just the game's release date. I want to find out when Pokemon was actually like created.
1995, I think. I'm pretty sure it's 1995 and Yu-Gi-Oh! 1996.
Yeah, that's what I remember from the games. Apparently, according, I know everyone goes Wikipedia is not the greatest source for information, but I think it's great. You've sort of fact-checked things. It says original work, Pocket Monsters Red and Green, 1996.
Pocket Monsters, oh my god. Yeah, so
while we're talking about Kanto, shout out to Lavender Town for making people's ears bleed.
So the story was basic back then, but back then it really was, catching them all really was an achievable goal back in the day.
Yeah, especially when you had a friend and a link cable.
And every Pokemon was actually in the game.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. So the story's a bit bleak back then, but one thing that is never strayed from the older games is general difficulty. Kerry, as a main player of Gen 1, how would you rate the difficulty of the originals?
I think it's kind of hard to give it an exact difficulty rating, because the game's difficulty sort of changes depending on what Pokemon you have with you. Obviously, if you pick Charmander, the first gym is rock type and the second is water, so you've got a pretty rough road ahead of you. If you pick Bulbasaur, you can fly for it. If you pick Squirtle, it's like medium difficulty for the beginning, but then I wouldn't say it's a hard game. Obviously, I played it when I was quite young. I borrowed our cousin's copy when I was like 7 or 8, maybe, when Game Boys were chunky and required actual batteries inside them. And the power light was always red, no matter how much power it had, which was a good indication of when your game was suddenly going to die. I suppose I remember it being quite hard when I was younger because I didn't really understand Pokemon. And I say this as someone who doesn't understand EVs and IVs and competitive battling that well. I just want to catch cute Pokemon. I say it was solid for what it was.
That's fair.
It was well balanced.
I've never played it that far in, but comparing it to the newer games, I know it's a level above when you put grinding into the calculation and how strong stuff was back then. Because obviously types have gotten weaker as the days have gone on, I think. Compare dragon and psychic types to what they are now.
They're still dragon strong, is the king.
But they're nowhere near as strong as they used to be against their other typings.
Back in Gen 1, I believe the only dragon Pokemon were Dratini, Dragonair, and Dragonite. Could be wrong on that.
No, I think you're correct on that one.
But because they were hard to catch and hard to raise. Actually, I'm not. I think Dratini was a Game Corner prize. So it's sort of coming back to me now. And they were intensely.
Even then, it was basically impossible to get the only dragon type.
But it was one of those things that was always worth the effort when you got there. I did actually buy Pokemon Yellow when they were re-released for the 3DS, and I got so frustrated because I'm so used to EXP shares and things like that with the grinding that I took on the Elite Four 6-7 levels below their minimum. Still won because I knew what I was doing, but
yeah,
it's a well-balanced game.
Mm. Yeah, I'd say it was balanced for when it, considering what it was back then. So, taking this all into account, what would you rate Gen 1?
Without trying to get people to stab me, and this is a high rating, I'd give it a 7.5, and I can sort of explain that. It's because it's a good, solid game, and obviously it stands out and is unbeatable in a lot of ways compared to the newer games, but newer technology, the games have stories, and in some ways, it just can't compare. But I think being a lot of people's first introduction to the world of Pokemon, it's got a special place in a lot of people's hearts.
That's fair enough. Obviously, it's a bit harder for me to rate because I have played Gen 1, but I never really completed it. I was a bit too young to really understand how the game worked back then. But
yeah,
to this day, the Gen 1s are close to being my favourite Pokemon. The difficulty was hard enough to really make victories worth it. But as you said, if you compare it to what the newer games give you story-wise, it really does just feel like gotta catch them all and that's it.
Mm.
So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Because of the Pokemon that it gave us and the beginning of a franchise it gave us, it's got to have a high rating in my book.
And contrary to beliefs, the 7s is high.
Yes. And with that, let's move on over to our next game, which I'm going to have to get Kerry to explain again because I've played this one even less.
So Alex hasn't played that much Johto. And that kind of makes me sad. This one, admittedly, is harder for me to describe without the lenses of nostalgia than Pokemon Red and Blue, because Pokemon Silver was the first game I actually owned myself. And Gold and Silver were released on the 21st of November, 1999. Yikes. Doesn't that make you feel old?
It does when you think about it, really.
Now, again, if we're going on, where should we start? I'm going to start with the story. Again, the story was basic. I mean, Team Rocket were a bit more evil in this game, but it was still very much got to catch them all, got to stop Team Rocket, they're being jerks. But this one, if you want to look at it sideways, even though it's technically not true, this one had, you got to fight 16 gym leaders. Because after you completed Johto and defeated the Elite Four, you could just like hop over on the train and go to Kanto and fight all the gym leaders over there. And since there's apparently only one league for these two places, after you've defeated all the gym leaders there, you got to go to, I want to say Mount Silver, but I'm not sure if I'm remembering that correctly, and fight Red or Ash and his level 80 Pikachu. That was a jump up in difficulty for final, as far as final fights go. All his Pokemon are in the 80s, which honestly I really wish was something they brought to newer games.
I'm correct. There is in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, they made it like 81, 82, didn't they, for Pikachu?
I will quickly look at those levels, actually. Anyway, I was wrong. Pikachu is the highest. I go back. Right. You get to the top of Mount Silver, and you fight Red, who's basically Ash. And it's something I wish the later games had, because the levels of the Pokemon for back then were considered insanely high. He has a level 81 Pikachu, a level 73 Espeon, a level 75 Big Boy, aka Snorlax, a level 77 Blastoise, 77 Charizard, and 77 Venusaur.
Yeah, so a serious jump up into what you were last fighting.
The actual main trainer fight before Red again is you fight Blue or Gary. Gary motherfucking Oak.
The one that no one actually knew. Oh, what's my grandson called again? Ah, okay, he's called that.
Shout out to anyone who named him something like Butthole. This is my grandson, Butthole. You've been friends since you were children.
What's he called again?
He's my grandson. I have no idea what his name is, even though we like live next door to each other. Is Oak okay?
I have no idea. Probably sniffing too much Bulbasaur's.
Stop licking Bulbasaur's, Professor.
Back on topic.
The Pokemon. Now, I know Alex doesn't have a particular fondness for Chikorita.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because Chikorita, shut up Alex, is amazing. In its own way.
Ugh.
I genuinely like Chikorita and all its evolutions, but it kind of feels like the participation prize of starters on that game. My favourite was always Cyndaquil. And you can't go wrong with Typhlosion. And then we have Totodile.
Who is my favourite? Totodile is just wicked. And he evolves at level 30 when the others evolve at 36 or around that level.
I believe Quillover evolves into Typhlosion around level 36.
Yeah, the fire types always do tend to be about 36. But anyway, I do like Cyndaquil. I do like Totodile. And I will give it to it. Lesser Bulbasaur is kind of interesting.
Lesser Bulbasaur.
I've seen bits of the anime for Gen 2, and I've seen the games get played. But apart from the legendaries, which are cool, and two of the starters, none of the Pokemon really stick out for me in this game. I don't know why. They just don't have the same wow factor that the Gen 1s did, in my opinion. That might just be me, but
it is all a matter of opinion. I have an immense soft spot for Houndour and Houndoom, edgy Growlithe and Arcanine.
I do like them.
Tiefling dog.
I do like that one.
I like the legendaries because they are, in essence, dogs. You can't go wrong with dogs. I actually like Gen 2's Pokemon. I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with Miltank, despite what I've said in an earlier Game Junkies episode. Miltank is a Pokemon I love, also a Pokemon I want to hit violently for all the suffering it caused me. I like Ferret, and I like the memes that have come out from Ferret walking. Ferret walks until this is released. It's funny, isn't it? When you're trying to think of like what Pokemon were released in a gen on the spot, they just all disappear.
Mm.
Fortress is kind of cool. And we got Smeargle, the artist Pokemon.
Smeargle was broken in later games because you could just paint on a legendary Pokemon.
Oh, for sure. It was released early, but it just... I suppose it couldn't reach its full potential in Gen 2. But yeah, it got broken as hell in later games. Apparently, the only Pokemon that released in Gen 2, according to my brain at the moment, were Tiefling Dog, Artist Pokemon, and Fortress Bug.
I can't remember them.
Tyranitar.
Okay, I will give it to you. Tyranitar is what makes it for me. For
How
Gen
could
2.
I forget Tyranitar?
I have no idea.
Phanpy. Phanpy is adorable. The giraffe Pokemon, whose name I always pronounce wrong, but its name is the same spelt backwards.
Girafarig.
That's the one.
Girafarig is Girafarig spelled backwards.
It's not for everyone, but I'm pretty sure Gen 2 was when Blissey was released. The Pokemon that's insanely weak to attack, but has insane amounts of
HP at level 3. The level
pretty
100.
Much. Even though you couldn't get it legitly. That was also the really Celebi. And then we had Lugia and Ho-Oh.
I kind of think Ho-Oh is better, actually.
I mean, obviously I got the Lugia version, but I think Ho-Oh's design is gorgeous.
Yeah, Ho-Oh
the fiery birds.
And Ho-Oh was shown in Gen 1 as well.
Yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah, it was one of the first Pokemon that Ash saw at the end of the first episode, if I'm correct.
I know you're not fond of spiders, but Spinarak's cute.
I will give a pass on spiders to Spinarak.
It is adorable.
So, taking all of this into account, what's your rating for Gen 2?
I'm going to give Johto an 8.5 out of 10. It was the introduction of breeding Pokemon. You also got Togepi, Togetic, but no Togekiss yet. It was the game where you could breed Pokemon, fight 16 gym leaders, and you could fight Ash, who I guess was like, that was basically going to fight God back in the day. Again, the story was a bit lacking compared to the mirror games. But I think for the first few generations, the story was generally catch 'em all. Team, Rocket, Magma, Aqua. Team eats spaghetti as being a jerk and they need to be stopped.
And that is a very fair opinion. Now, I'm probably going to get stabbed at some point because I'm going to only give it a 5 out of 10.
I mean, to be fair, you haven't really played it.
The 16 gyms, I find that really cool. Fighting Red with level 80 is really cool. And I like the legendaries in this game and Tyranitar. But apart from a couple Pokemon, and obviously the story is basically the same as the other game, it's just the Pokemon don't do it for me in this generation like Gen 1 did. I don't find them that interesting.
Before we move on, can I give everyone two pointless facts that they already know?
Yeah, sure.
In Kanto, all the towns were named after colours, and in Johto, it was all like plant-based names.
Hmm.
Some pointless trivia that everyone already knew.
So after your high rating and my kind of low rating,
yeah,
let's talk about probably one of my favourites, actually. Let's talk about Gen 3.
Region of Hoenn, which I'm probably pronouncing wrong. Ruby and Sapphire.
I'm probably sure it's got a Silent Q in there somewhere.
Probably. The 21st of November, 2002. So, exactly 3 years. No, 4 years, sorry. Exactly 4 years after Gold and Silver. Right, Hoenn. You've actually played this one, so...
Yes, I have actually played this one start to finish. Both the original and the remake, so I can give my opinions on this one.
Let's start with the starters. Treecko, Torchic, or everyone's favourite, Mudkip.
See, I'm going to... This is where the water starters changed for me, because my favourite was actually Treecko in this game. I fucking love Treecko.
Treecko was a solid choice. And obviously, from my comment, I picked Mudkip. It was cute. It had orange cheeks.
Now, I mean, Torchic was okay, but he's a bit... Meh. He was a fire chicken that punched things.
I mean, at one point they gave out a Blaziken with speed boost as a prize, and that was pretty solid.
That was wicked.
Then you had Blaziken on, like, amphetamines.
Yeah, Mega Blaziken.
This Mega Swamp Heart just looked like a rugby player.
I think that was kind of what they were going for, to be fair.
Might have been.
But this was, in my opinion, this was probably the first game that truly had any, like, proper story to it that wasn't just got to catch them all.
Yeah.
Because if I'm correct, Team Magma wanted to use drought the world to lower the sea levels to give more land.
Mm-hmm.
And Aqua wanted to do the opposite. And to be honest, Aqua's idea just kind of sucks. But
you say that like Team Magma's idea was good.
I know, but you could see where I'm coming from. More land equals more place to stay. Team Aqua, more water means less land. Wait a minute. It doesn't make much sense.
Stairs in Pokemon Sapphire.
I mean, Kyogre's cool, let's be fair, but it doesn't make sense, Team Aqua's version of it.
I never said it did. I don't support their goals. I just think they are a step up from the original Team Rocket, because these ones actually seem to have personality. They don't just realize, I am doing a bad thing after you defeat them. When their plan starts to backfire quite horribly and the world either starts frying or drowning, they're like, well, perhaps I shouldn't have done this. And the other leader's a bit like, you don't say. And you're just like, I'm 10 years old. I shouldn't be dealing with this. I want to go back to school.
This is like, can I go home yet? I haven't done my sats.
I haven't done my homework yet. My mum said I got to be home by 8. My mum also said I wasn't supposed to walk around with adult men that I didn't really know. That's something that's always vaguely concerned me about the early Pokemon games. It's like, right, you're 10 years old. Bye. Off you go. See you never. Because really, Professor, how often did you go home to see your mother?
Professor Oki's gone for about 3 months. I'm just saying, that's definitely what happened.
But this one, I mean, the quote-unquote villain storyline was better, but you also had other little things going on, like your pal Wally, who you help catch a Ralts, and then he tries to kick your ass and usually fails miserably.
Until you got to the remakes.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Slayed in his final fight.
Mm. And just the music in the background, and it's like, holy crap, where was this in the original?
Still kicked his ass.
I mean, yeah, you kick his ass, it's Wally. You're going to kick his ass.
But he put a pretty good show.
I like him as a character. Also, Ruby and Sapphire, shout out to Pico the Wingull.
Pico.
Owned by the old man with a boat.
Yeah, I remember Pico.
So, difficulty rating.
I've always found the older games generally had the same difficulty to them. I find Pokemon was starting to be a bit more balanced at this point. But you still had the normal methods of grinding. Still had fairly difficult Pokemon back then. So I would say the difficulty was probably the same as the older games in that sense, but it definitely got a bit easier at this point.
I reckon, thinking back to my first playthrough, one of the hardest points is when you have to fight your own dad in his gym. Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the first game where your dad is actually like a present figure in your life. Where your dad isn't Professor Oak. Your dad isn't the mailman. And your dad actually has a presence in your life? Like, what the heck? But his gym is the normal type, and I like that they've done that. And the fight, if you're not prepared for it, is oddly hard. Vigoroth and two Slakings, to my memory. I mean, Slaking is a fantastic Pokemon, aside from it's like loafing around every other turn. But they hit like tanks.
I mean, to be fair, if it didn't have loafing around, you wouldn't beat that gym.
No. Because what I think they had Focus Punch, where your first turn you have to tighten your focus, as it were. And if you let them hit, it hit you like a freight train.
It was more or less a one-shot, to be fair.
Pretty much.
Depending on the Pokemon, which, let's be honest, Pokemon weren't really tanky back then, were they? You had a Steel type was tanky, but everything else wasn't.
Steel types were tanky until somebody brought Earthquake to the party.
Yeah, let's be honest. Tankiness wasn't really a thing back then unless it was a Slaking or an Aggron.
But that fight, you had Slakings that hit like freight trains, and Vigoroth, which was fast and had Slash, which has an insanely high crit ratio. So, didn't always go the way you wanted it.
No.
Don't remember losing to him, because I was usually got quite lucky, but I do remember that battle being a real struggle the first time we went for it. I'd almost used all my items.
Yeah, this set of games in this generation definitely stand out as one of the better ones to me. The Pokemon selection is fantastic. You got three really decent starters. You've got amazing Pokemon throughout. You got Gardevoir, you got Aggron, you got Metagross,
you got Salamence, the Regis.
All the Pokemon just slapped in this game.
They did.
The difficulty. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Basically the thing that looks like a Rolo. The game still had a layer of difficulty to it, and the story was a ramp up. It wasn't just gotta catch them all.
No.
So how would you rate Gen 3?
I'm going to give it a solid 8. I know I use this term a lot, but it was revolutionary. The game was in full colour. You could be a girl. You walked past puddles and you saw your reflection. And it was the introduction of double battles.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember it being a really, really solid game. Also, shout out for this game for having Skitty in it.
Delicati. And Sky Mori. I can't believe we forgot Sky Mori.
Altaria. I love that Pokemon. It's just so pretty. Flygon.
Linoone.
Yeah.
See, as Flygon. I said, the game just slaps.
Armaldo. Manectric. Tropius.
I'm going to give it a... Oh, this is a hard one. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
There's a few things that I'd change, but it's not a lot I would change.
No.
This game is just fantastic in all aspects to me.
I think it's a very solid game. But now we're going to swap a bit because we're moving on to 4th gen. And I have played 4th gen, but I believe this is one of Alex's favourites, and he is more knowledgeable about it than I am because he played it more times than me.
Arguably, I've got to probably say it is my favorite generation. I can't remember exactly when fourth gen came out. I haven't checked those things. I'm not as prepared as Kerry, if I'm completely honest. Just sort of winging.
Oh, we might as well give some information. 28th of September 2006.
Yeah. In 2006, one of the best games came out. It still kept its difficulty rating up there with the previous. You had the up in graphics. You had the up in the bad guys' plans. I mean, their plan was literally like universe size, not planetary. Yeah. And despite the fact that Cyrus was a bit of an emo, the Pokemon were another step up. I wouldn't say they were better than third gen, but I'd put them on the same level. So how do you feel about the Pokemon for this game?
Was this the game that gave us Cynthia?
Yes, and the most legendary champion music ever.
It does slap. It also gave us Spirit Tomb, I believe.
If you didn't have internet.
Oh, for sure. But it was, I believe, the first Pokemon that nothing is super effective against it.
I believe that's not the case anymore because of fairy typing.
No. But
back in the day, it had no weakness.
Which was like, wow, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, that was a first. So the story was quite an up, I think. It starts with the basic theme of gotta catch them all. And just try and catch them all. You and your friend on the most insane amount of medication decides you got to catch a red Gyarados. That's in the lake, supposedly. The red Gyarados you never find, unfortunately.
Well, you don't eat weird mushrooms, kids.
Oh, honest to God, the speed that Barry is in the original was ridiculous.
Barry's clearly on some kind of medication.
Yeah. And then you get the starters. Charmander, Piplup, Turtwig. They give you Infernape, Torterra, Empoleon. Which I'm sure, how would you rate the starter that you had?
Yeah, this is my downfall. I picked Piplup because I thought it was the cutest.
I mean, Empoleon was good, but I found that Steels really did suffer in this generation.
It did. I mean, it's a bit of a crap time having a water Pokemon that's also somehow weak to Earthquake.
Oh, yeah. Because that hurts.
I believe Earthquake got quite the boost in use over the years.
Yeah, its power rating became 100 in this game.
It's one of my favourite moves because it's got a good power level and a good chance of hitting.
It's just very universal. Regardless of whether it's super effective or not, it always really does hit hard.
Although I am tempted in the remakes to pick a Chimchar and call it Charlie. Because it's red-haired and it punches. The look Alex is giving me.
I don't mind. No, I mean, for me, I had Torterra originally. And not only did it evolve at level 32, this was the last game which had, like, unique level-up points. Because you had Chimchar evolve at level 14. Piplup evolved at level 16 and Turtwig evolved at level 18. And then it went Torterra, you got at level 32. I'm pretty sure you got Piplup at level 34. No, Empoleon at level 34. And then Infernape at level 36. So it was a bit of an odd level up, but it was pretty cool having Torterra level 32 because it means you absolutely annihilated the fourth gym, which was water type.
I have to admit, I don't remember as much about this game as I'd like to, especially considering the remakes are coming out later this year. But when you're trying to remember things on the spot, sometimes it just all goes by from your head.
Yeah.
Diamond and Pearl, that was the introduction. They introduced mining to this game, didn't they?
Yeah, they introduced the underground mine, which, newsflash, if you've seen the trailer for Brilliant Diamond in... Is it Brilliant Diamond... Diamond and Shining Pearl?
I believe so.
The mine gets an extension. Not only can you build underground bases, like you could in Gen 3, which we forgot to mention, there is also an underground area to encounter wild Pokemon. So the underground is getting a full-on expansion. It becomes its own wild area.
That's something to look forward to for sure.
And not only that, we go back to Team Plasma. They were back in this game, which had the worst ball haircuts you've ever seen.
It's true.
But also one of the hardest teams to fight. Do you remember back after beating the first gym, fighting Mars with her pure ugly when it was level 6? And hit like an absolute monster truck?
I'd rather not remember, but yes, I do. Bad memories, Alex.
No one we never took Pure Ugly because its name was literally Pure Ugly.
It's actually a surprisingly solid Pokemon.
It's monstrous. I might have to have a Pure Ugly in the playthrough of the remake. I'm not gonna lie.
Ooh, is this a game where we got Skuntank?
Yes.
Yes. Skuntank
is probably going to be a Diamond exclusive, just like Pure Ugly is a Pearl exclusive.
I'm happy with my big smelly skunk. They tend to hit like trains as well.
They get flamethrower for a start. And explosion if they keep that in this game.
Yeah.
And then you get the legendaries. Palkia and Dialga.
Time and space.
Yeah, in my opinion, the best set of legendaries we've had so far.
Certainly the most unique.
And the first dragon legendary. Oh, wait, no, Rayquaza. We had Rayquaza, well, didn't we?
Because if we're not counting, like, the three legendaries, like, you always get the little trio. Kanto only had the one, that was Mewtwo. Then we had Ho-Oh and Lugia. Then we had Kyogre and Groudon. And yeah, they were cool. Like, we had Firebird and Waterbird dragon thing. And then we had big flat fish and underground monstrosity. But now we have the beings of time and space. So it's a bit of a step up.
That are also dragon types. They were really a step up in that sense. And then not only that, when you put the exclusive, they weren't exclusives, but what I mean is the extra Pokemon that you got in this game. You got the Lake Trio, Uxie, Mesprit, and Azelf. They were psychic. They're a bit weak, but they're good. Then you had Heatran, which was fire and steel for some reason. So such one earthquake and it was dead. It was fucked after one hit from earthquake. And then you had Giratina.
Oh.
In Pokemon Platinum gave you a whole nother form and just made Giratina such a standout Pokemon.
Do you remember doing the Distortion World for the first time?
I so can't wait. If they bring the Distortion World back in the remakes, I'm looking so forward to it. They've all got to, really, haven't they?
Oh, but can you imagine it in this type, like, day and age's graphics?
Yeah. That is going to be such a missed opportunity if they don't bring it back.
Or maybe they'll bring it out as a DLC if it's not in base game. That is something I'd pay for.
If you think about it, Ruby and Sapphire remakes got the Rayquaza storyline.
They did.
So there's no reason why this shouldn't get the Giratina storyline.
Oh, I'm sure we can see.
this was also the first game where you could buy a property, which cost you an absolute fortune. Like, the villa was just ridiculous money.
You could own a villa at, like, 12 years old or however old you are.
And being a little bit silly here, you know, obviously, back in the days of the DS, you had cheats, like an action replay.
Yeah.
If you maxed out your money, so it's like 999 million or something like that, or 99 million, you still couldn't afford to max out the villa. The villa still had some upgrades after that form of money.
Disclaimer, we've only used it after we completed the game manually.
Yeah, I wouldn't use it.
That was the rule.
Is there any bad points you can think of for this one?
I mean, I think there's all just the usual, like, nitpicky little things. Like, I don't remember the story that well. Also, quick question. Do you think, you know, the way Barry was so intensely hyper and he was always trying to find you money? Do you think he had a problem? He was trying to fund his problem.
He was an employee of Tom Nook and trying to pay back his debt.
Yeah, he had a raccoon coming to break his kneecaps in a couple hours. He needed the money. I did like Diamond and Pearl, and nothing's been said, but I can kind of hope that they might bring back the primal versions of the legendaries. Although they were in a Mystery Dungeon game once, I believe.
The biggest problem I see with that is Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire had the primal versions on the case.
Yeah.
These ones are regular, so I have a strong feeling that it's not going to be the case.
No, but we also live in the time of DLCs now.
In my opinion, one of the worst points was the final two gyms. Ice type was gym 7 and electric type was the 8th gym. And that is ridiculously easy types to take down.
I feel like having electric for your 8th gym is a very, very odd choice, because that's usually where you put the dragon gym or something difficult.
Yeah. Volkner was easy to beat. I will give him to them. In Pokemon Platinum, he had Electrovire, which really did up it.
Yeah.
And this was the game where they started upping the amount of Pokemon the gym leaders had. I mean, at this point, Volkner had 5 Pokemon. And that really did change a lot, despite the fact Electric is a relatively easy type to beat.
Mm.
He had 5 Pokemon at his disposal, and that really did up everything at that point.
Wasn't Diamond and Pearl the introduction of Arceus, or Arceus, however you pronounce it?
Yeah, the big Pokemon, which, let's be honest, you could kill quite easily with, like, a level 18 frame.
I use Judgment. I hit you. You die. depending on the plate you put on it.
Yeah, it changed the type of Judgment, which was really cool.
That was quite cool.
Yeah, Shaman was also in this game.
Shaman. I do like Shaman. It's a hedgehog. How can you not like it?
This was also the introduction of Garchomp, of Lucario, Quagsire. Don't hate on Quagsires.
Quagsire's Gen 2.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah, sure. Wyvern Quagsire Gen 2.
I love Quagsire.
It's just this derpy face.
Yeah. So I'm going to give this a 9 out of 10. It has a few little issues, like the last few gyms being easier than the previous gyms. And the story is a little overkill at points. But apart from that, it is my favourite. So I've got to give it a 9 out of 10.
At the risk of stabbing, I'm going to give it a 7.5.
That's fair.
I like the game. And don't get me wrong, I'm excited to replay it. But for a second time, I guess. I'm looking forward to the remake and seeing it all again. Because who doesn't? Who isn't excited? If you play Pokemon, why are you not excited? You should be.
Right. So the next one on the list is one that got a lot of hate. Right. So moving on to a game that got a ton of hate. And I can see why, but at the same time, it's probably one of my favorites. And that's Pokemon Black and White, which Pokemon Black had the White Legendary, Pokemon White had the Black Legendary, which is a bit of an odd mix. But let's talk about the pros of this game first. One, this was the first game where you were actually older than 10.
You're like 16 or something, weren't you?
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you're about 16 in this game. Which is a nice help because it actually feels a bit more proper. This had some pretty interesting Pokemon, like Trubbish. It had like a Pokemon which was literally a bloom. It had a coffin Pokemon.
Lovely.
I actually love Sarcophagus. Coffigregious. I actually love that Pokemon, if I'm being completely honest. It's fantastic. It had one of the coolest gym themes and Elite Four themes ever.
I'll give it that. And it had N.
It had N, which is a huge bonus, but we'll get to N in a bit. It had, in my opinion, the first genuinely evil antagonist. And it also had bearable companions, like your friends in this game. You could actually put up with them and not want to just yeet them out of existence.
Is this the game you got to ride the Ferris wheel with the hiker?
Yeah.
You got uncomfortably close to you.
And also riding it with N, which we'll get back to N. Though this game does have a few downsides to it. You got the questionable Pokemon like Trubbish, which Garbodor is actually really good, apart from being a pile of trash, literally speaking. It gave you Simiport, Simiseer, and Simisage, which absolutely sucked.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it gave you, in my opinion, arguably one of the crappiest Elite Four champions of all time, being older.
Is he a flame man? I genuinely do not remember the champion, Black and White.
He's a guy with the big zigzag hair like that. And has a Volcanion, which is kind of surprising because that is a legendary Pokemon.
I always forget that one. Sorry. This was the first game, though, that kind of moved out of the theme of every world is Japanese. Apparently this one was more built on New York City.
Yeah, and I like that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Right, starters.
As for starters, you have... Oh, God, this is a hard one to remember. You had Tepig, the fire Pokemon, which became Fire and Fighting, I believe. You have Oshawott, which became Samurott in the end. And you had Snivy, which became Superior, which is actually my favourite one. I started with Tepig originally, but Superior quickly became my favourite.
Guess which one Carrie picked? I picked the sad clown otter.
Hey, if you ever saw Oshawott in the anime, Carrie, you would fall in love with him all over again. He is sad little shy Oshawott.
Shout out to Superior, though, when they gave away Contrary Superior.
Superiors? That broke competitive.
It did. And it was beautiful.
So, we've talked about some of the good Pokemon. Actually, no, we haven't finished talking about Pokemon. Obviously, in this game, it featured... I know you're not a fan of the Coffin Pokemon, but Coffigregious is one of my favourites. It featured Sandile.
I like Sandile.
It featured Herdier, which was awesome. Victini, which is a cool Pokemon. Joltik and Galvantula, one of the only other spiders I'll allow.
Yeah.
It also featured arguably one of the coolest looking legendaries. And I know that that's a very opinionated comment, but weren't Zekrom and Reshiram in like a look category of their own?
I think they were. I love Reshiram.
And then they got Fusion Bolt and Fusion Flare.
Yeah.
Which also looked incredible on that game. This was also the first game where they had full moving animation while in battle.
It was a bit pixely and it occasionally made the game really lag.
But despite the fact it was really pixely, it was also such a revolutionary moment. Mm.
This was also the first game that changed seasons depending on when your DS clock was set.
Yes, as well. It wasn't major, like there wasn't any real change. But it had seasons, so it would rain instead of snow and stuff like that.
I mean, mostly it was just the grass changing colour and the trees, but it was a really cool idea.
And some Pokemon would pop out that didn't pop out before.
Is this the one where you had the deer Pokemon, which form changes depending on the season? Or was that the next gen?
Fauna and Sands, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah, Sourcebook, something like that. But yeah, that was a deer Pokemon that changed depending on the weather in the season.
Because we haven't done the date on it yet, this one was released, let me quickly check my list, 18th of September 2010.
Yeah, so a whole 4 years after Gen 4, which really just goes to show how popular Gen 4 was again.
I mean, there was obviously games between Diamond and Pearl and Black and White. Like, we had Pokemon Platinum, Heart Gold and Soul Silver, Explorers of Darkness and Time, the Mystery Dungeons one, Shadows of Almia, Pokemon Ranger.
Oh, that was an interesting game.
It was, but let's not dwell on that for now.
Yeah. It really was... I think it was quite a step up. But... it had some bad points. For example, some of the gym leaders absolutely sucked, and the champion in either game, Black and White 2 or Black and White, sucked.
I have to admit, I never played Black and White 2, but when Alex told me who the champion was, my reaction at best was just like, why?
Older was a bad champion. Had pretty cool music, but bad. Iris had even worse music, made it sound like a Nintendo game from 2000, and she sucked even worse.
Yeah. It just seems like such a... it's a good game, but I think the champions are part of what let it down so badly. I mean, the Elite Four music slapped, though.
Yeah. There's one last thing we need to talk about, though, and that's N. Angestius. Yes. We can put them in the same... Gestius. We'll call him Gestius because I think that's the correct pronunciation. Yeah. We'll put these two in the same category because they both need each other to work properly.
Should we address the elephant in the room first? N's room?
Yes.
And how when you're young, it's like, wow, this is weird. And it's just really sad when you kind of understand the gravity of everything when you get a bit older.
Yeah, do you want to basically explain what it was? For context, N is basically an adult, but has the room of like a 4 or 5 year old.
It's just full of toys, from what I can remember.
Yes.
It's like a basketball court and big bricks and a skateboarding ramp. But I think it's the music in there. Because if I remember in there, the music was like quite sad.
Yeah.
And it's just... it was odd.
Yeah, he was basically that isolated from the world that he still had more or less a child's mindset.
He had the mentality of a child in a lot of ways, which made his character amazing, but also tragic.
Yeah, he, Angestius, manipulated that side of it.
Hmm.
used it to set up his plan, and then when N wasn't any use to him, basically threw him to the side and tried to beat you in a battle. And I'm just going to say, Gestis was... I lost to Gestis, like, 4 times.
I've probably lost to him as well. I don't really have that many clear memories of playing this.
Do you fight him? Which was ridiculous. He had Electros. He had... I can't remember all his Pokemon. He had Hydreigon at, like, level 60, which was just insane, because that was the pseudo-legendary.
Mm.
He was just on a level of his own for strength.
Did you fight him just before slash after catching Reshiram or Zekrom?
You caught Reshiram and Zekrom, then you fought N, and then you fought Gestis straight after N.
I probably have lost that fight then. My timeline of this game is a bit blurry because I, unlike all the others, I only played this one once, and now I'm kind of wanting to give it another go. I think I judged it a bit harshly the first time I played it. Like, this was kind of a waste of 30 quid. But do you think they'll ever remake this one, seeing as they seem to be remaking all the old ones?
Well, it's technically next for a remake.
Hmm.
Give it a few years, I'd say. They seem to be making new generations faster than they used to, I've noticed. Hmm. So who knows?
But I guess a lot of Pokemon's audience is now, well, what I have to refer to as the younger generation as I creep up closer and closer to old age. But do you reckon they'd go, they'd put like more depth into the whole N storyline? Because whilst it was fairly in depth for a DS game at its time, I like hours and hours of story.
It was very quickly glossed over.
It
got very into the whole truth straight away at the end, but it was only very sudden. And if you were young, it probably doesn't make any sense.
I think if they'd remade it and really expanded on the end thing, made it so that you had to work it out yourself up until the end.
Yeah.
I know that would go over a lot of the younger players' heads, but I think it would work. I think it would be great.
So, what would you give Gen 5 out of 10?
This is hard because it's not my favourite generation. Like I said, I judged it quite harshly. I didn't hate on it, but I kind of did jump on the it's not that good bandwagon. But I liked N. And I hate pronouncing things because I usually pronounce them wrong. What's his name, Alex?
Gestis.
That's the one. Yes.
Had a silent H in it, if you ever.
Yeah. His theme slapped and he was truly evil. Like, the truest evil we'd gotten so far. And because of that, I'm actually going to give it an 8 out of 10.
That surprised me.
The Pokemon didn't really appeal to me. Some of the music was good. I liked some of the things like the season changing. And what I've just mentioned is basically what's kind of boosted it for me. If that wasn't there, I honestly think this would be a 5 or 6 game for me.
I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
This was, in my opinion, the last difficult game. The last game that actually gave you a challenge. The Pokemon, were a bit interesting, were really good once you got into them. The gyms were quite hard. The music was really good. But the story was over just like that. And there was no after story. There was no post game.
There was no real reward for completing it.
And the world wasn't that big either. So once you did get to the end, there wasn't really anything to do apart from the battle tower.
Which
cut boring quite quickly, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's got kind of a lack of replay value, which I think hurt it a bit.
Yeah, because of that lack, that's why it's slower. I'm quite surprised you went for an 8, if I'm honest.
So am I, to be honest with you.
But... if it wasn't, yeah, if it wasn't for Gestus and N, this game would probably have my lowest rating so far.
Yeah.
They just also transform it.
Shout out to the hiker in the Ferris wheel. He added something to that. He makes you uncomfortable. But shall we skip ahead 3 years to the 12th of October, 2013?
This game was truly a revelation to its counterpart. And is talking about Gen 6. Pokemon X and Pokemon Y. The first games that were in 3D, the first game with customizable trainers and customized clothing, where it was more than just you and a rival. You actually had a group of friends. And the first game that where Pokemon movement wasn't just really, really pixely Pokemon.
It's like genuine 3D models.
So let's get into this bit. Kerry, what? Give us a bit of a rundown of Gen 6.
Gen 6, set in glorious France, I believe.
That is correct.
Paris in particular, because we can only do capital cities. Nah, just kidding. I loved this game. I loved the theme of the legends. Like, I chose Pokemon X, which the legendary is based, I believe, on the Tree of Life. That's the kind of thing that appeals to me. I loved how you roller skated everywhere. Shoes are for suckers. Real people wear rollerblades. How the clothes were ridiculously expensive, and yet, instead of buying potions for your Pokemon, because the Pokemon Center is free, you decided to expand your collection of hats. It annoyed me you couldn't go without a hat, but...
which you did, I guess, hats in the later games.
Yeah, I guess hats were just mandatory back then. Apparently it was like the 20s or something. I loved the 3D scenery. I just really love this game. I'm trying to steer away from using the term revolutionary, but is there any other real way to describe this one? When you think from the jump from Unova to Kalos.
Yeah. And not only did it feature quite a revolutionary for being the player character for a change, it also had a really interesting addition, which was obviously fairy typing.
Yes.
It also had the EXP share, which has made leveling up way too easy, but it's also taken out the hatred of grinding.
The grinding was something that could very easily turn a fun session of Pokemon into, oh god, please, like, end me.
And not only that, is it literally, despite being a Pokemon game, featured the first bad guy trying to commit literal genocide. His plan was to literally kill everyone with a laser.
This game, though, kind of makes the theme of the legends make more sense, though, when you look at it from that angle.
Yeah. It's an odd one, this one, because it feels like it was made for the younger generation, and then you get into the bad guy's plans of this game, and it really doesn't fit the children's theme after that.
No, it stops being so child-friendly.
Yeah.
Also, first fairy-type legend.
First fairy-type legend. This also featured Mega Evolution, which I so hope makes a return at some point.
Be not fantastic if it did.
Yeah, so not only did it have Mega Evolution, it also gave you a group of characters that were likable. It wasn't just you and your annoying rival. I mean, your friend group was a bit annoying at points, but...
Yeah.
Good. In my opinion, this game had probably what was some of the least appealing starters, though.
I like Fennekin.
And Froakie's all right.
Greninja.
Yeah. Greninja's amazing.
Protein Greninja.
Chespin. Meh. And despite Fennekin being cute, Delphox.
Delphox wasn't fantastic, but.
I don't think any of the starters were really for this
one. They didn't particularly stand out in this one, but there have been worse starters, I think.
Yeah. I find in this game, I don't think a lot of the Pokemon were that interesting, if I'm completely honest. That is one of the bigger downfalls. Like, it focused so much on Mega Evolution and Fairy type, and that the Fairy types were cool, but everything else just sort of got left in arrears.
Do you remember how many people lost their minds over Sylveon, though?
Yeah, I remember that.
I think. If the trouble is with this one, is because if it had just a few more, for lack of better terms, memorable Pokemon, I reckon it could have carried itself even better, because the story and the gameplay, even the music, everything just carries itself so fantastically. No, you're not really a fan of the champion for this one.
I don't like Diantha.
I love Diantha's room and I love her theme, but she's so piss easy to beat.
This is one of the biggest issues I have with Generation 6, is it became, in my opinion, the first game, which is a trend that's plagued the rest of the Pokemon franchise. The games got a lot easier at this point.
They got very hand-holdy, and there's something I was going to get into in later games, that in the later games, they even tell you what moves are super effective. And yeah. I know it's not hurting anyone, but I wish you could turn it off, because I used to like guessing.
It really has. It made the game more. They made the game a lot more easier than it needed to be. Team Flare were easy. The later level gym leaders were easy. The champion. Just pathetic.
I mean, like I said, I like all the aesthetic things about her. Not so much her haircut, but the room and the theme. I love the theme, but the fight's over in about 4 seconds and suddenly you're the champion. It falls flat just a little bit.
Yeah, despite the fact it being revolutionary.
Despite the fact she has a Gardevoir.
So, for my rating for this game, I know this one was a little bit shorter, but I'm only going to give this a 6 out of 10.
Okay, that's fair.
It was revolutionary in comparison to its last counterpart. But the game lost its difficulty at this point. And I think that is the biggest kick in the teeth for the more traditional, the older fan base, for you people like you and me. It lost its competitiveness at this point.
Yeah, I really do see where you're coming from. I'm kind of two minds over the whole difficulty thing, because there are plenty of people who don't want to be challenged. They just want to play a game, and that's great. And I think they should have that option, but this game is very hand-holding. And as much as I could rave about the general aesthetics and all the upgrades, they can't carry the game on their own.
No.
So whilst it kind of pains me, I'm going to give it a 7. Because I genuinely do like this game. But pretty shiny clothes and rollerblades and Sylveon can't carry the game on their own.
And that is fair. And that wraps up Gen 6. So that was short, but I have a feeling this next one's going to be even shorter. Let's, and we can't even talk about the first set of mainline games for this one, because we didn't play them. So we're going to move straight on to Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, more specifically Gen 7.
Yep. Lola, 17th of November, 2017.
Which gave us, in my opinion, one of the coolest landscapes, because it gave us Hawaii. But it lacked in a few things.
I don't want to say I didn't like this game, but this, I love the creativity with the islands, and I like the cool things, like you can ride the Pokemon to do certain things. And I guess I kind of like the Z moves.
Yeah. Especially Pikachu's Z move, because Pikachu actually dances along with you.
Yeah. Not just stands there awkwardly, like, what are you doing?
Yeah. It's ridiculous as some of them were, to be fair.
I'm going to say it. I absolutely despise Lily as a character. She's so spineless and pathetic, and I hate her. She's just the ultimate piss baby that drags you down and howls all right, I guess. That's the best I can do.
Also very forgettable. So let's talk about the bad points, which is the majority of Gen 7. I feel like it's a graphics downgrade. The amount of clothing options you get is literally halved.
Yeah.
There is no gym.
Yes, that one, when you first told me, and but that's one of the cornerstones of Pokemon games.
Team Skull kind of sucked.
They dance at you. It's very threatening.
And not only that, in Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, the antagonist...
That's the next ones.
Yeah. The antagonist became less antagonistic. In Pokemon Sun and Moon, you've got something called Ultra Beasts, which is the next version of Pokemon from a different dimension. They're pretty cool. But in Sun and Moon, the antagonist, I can't remember her name, Lily's mother, she actually merges herself with an Ultra Beast to try and take over the world. In Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, she's like, oh no, I'm doing a bad thing. Let's just give up with life. Let's get the 10-year-old to fix all my issues. And we fix all her issues.
And she's like, thanks, kid. Now go away.
And then the post-game gave us Team Rainbow Rocket and wormholes to catch the legendaries.
Oh, God, those wormholes. I get what they were trying to do. They were more frustrating than fun. They could be incredibly anger-inducing.
I think the last thing to bring up is the no gyms. Because there was a gym of a sort. You went through the middle area and you had to fight the totem Pokemon, which were overpowered to high hell.
Yeah.
You could avoid taking critical hits. The chance of hitting them was halved. Their health was double the average Pokemon.
Again, I get what they were trying to do, but it just kind of fell flat. Because a lot of it was piss easy, and then this is ridiculous.
Yeah, the game was piss easy, and then you fought a totem Pokemon and you basically used all your healing items just to match them. They were ridiculous. And then at the end of the game, the Elite Four champion, because they're currently building the Elite Four is not complete at this point. So you fight your rival as the Elite Four champion to decide who becomes the Elite Four champion. And but Hell is not difficult. Hell is probably the easiest. Actually, I'm going to say second easiest, because Iris and Alder are just pathetic. He's harder than Diantha. But the point is, he's not Elite Four champion quality, and it just feels like the ultimate flop at the end of a game that already flopped.
I remember this being a game that took me a very long time to complete because I kept getting bored with it, which is something that never happened in a Pokemon game for me before. I think I don't really remember the ending. It's just that unmemorable for me. But I remember putting it down and just being really disappointed. I've never picked it up since.
So for my rating, I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10. It just, they halved the clothing and the customization. It was a smaller game. It felt like a graphics downgrade. No gyms. No Elite Four champion. The antagonist in Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon flopped.
I wanted Rainbow to push Lily into the sea.
What's the deal with Rainbow Rocket?
Why not just regular Rocket?
This game just sucked. I'm going to be... The fighting the Necrozma as the big golden dragon was the only highlight of this game. Because that was genuinely difficult.
That was a genuinely hard fight. But
that's it. That's all I've got. That's all I can remember about this game was fighting Necrozma at the end as the golden dragon thing was ridiculously hard. Like, he would one-shot your legendary Pokemon.
I think this game, it had good intentions, but it just failed to deliver, and it really failed to deliver. Like, as we've discovered, the game is mostly piss easy except for the totem Pokemon, which were ridiculous. And I get this challenge, and then there's like, just, it can look at you and one-shot you because they're that overpowered to everything you've just battled through to get to that point. And then obviously there's Lily. I've already said about my hatred for Lily. She's just so spineless and pathetic. I'm at a loss here. I'm genuinely lost for words. You brought up memories I'd rather have not remembered. And I've been trying to be somewhat generous with my scores, but I think I'm going to have to mirror Alex and give this one a 40. This is painful. Again, this game could have been fantastic because some of the creativity, like the landscape and the getting between islands and the riding Pokemon, that was good. But do you remember what the starters were for this one? Because I genuinely don't remember.
Rowlet, he was a owl that became grass and ghost for some reason, not grass and flying.
It was like Popplio,
which became a circus otter,
which is actually my favorite. The circus.
The circus. The circus.
And then we got. Didn't we get Emo Kitten as well? Litten the Emo Kitten.
Yeah, which I'm not even going to get into what you see on the internet with. what was their final evolution?
Incineroar.
I'm not even going to get into what I've heard of is on the internet for Incineroar.
Kids, don't search for Incineroar Rule 34. You'll regret it for the rest of life.
So, to get the disgust out of my mind of Incineroar and Gen 7 in general. Wait, what's Gen 7 again? Let's talk about Gen 7. Oh, wait, no, I mean Gen 8. Despite the fact that Gen 7 shouldn't exist.
Welcome to our country, kids.
Welcome to the first game that was not only in Britain, like the British countryside, like they drastically overestimated what kind of weather we get and the amount of sun we get.
we don't see that much sun in about 5 years, trust me.
August was 2 years ago. August was the month with the least rain in the UK. And in Cornwall, it was sunny for 13 days. The rest was rain. So just take that into perspective.
We live in the tourist county, so...
August had the least amount of rain 2 years ago, and it rained for 18 days of those of that month.
I mean, you should see this place in January.
Let's get into what is arguably one of my favorites, which is Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield.
It is brilliant, this one is. And I'm not just saying that because it was based around England.
So the first mainline game to come to the Switch, so obviously the jump in quality was huge.
Yeah.
In my opinion, despite not a lot of people agreeing, it gave you the best rival that Pokemon have ever given you, which was Hop.
I like Hop. I don't see why people like crapple over Hop.
They crapple over him because he's weak.
But he's not. I mean, get to the story in a minute, but the story is easily one the best like character slash rival story.
Yeah.
That
it features a more questionable version of Mega Evolution in Z-moves known as Dynamaxing, which is either game-breaking when you're in competitive or it absolutely flops. Because fighting some Gigantamaxed Pokemon in certain situations is ridiculous. Not only that, but it featured Zamazenta and Zacian, which on power levels peak at the same levels that Arceus and Mega Rayquaza do.
Yeah.
They are on par with Mega Rayquaza and absolutely overshadow every other legendary in existence in the coding that they are. They're ridiculous, actually, if you put that into perspective.
It's pretty insane.
It featured some interesting starters. We had Scorbunny, which evolved into Cinderace, which in Cinderace was really good. It was a football rabbit, football fire rabbit.
Then we had Grookey, which I kind of wish I picked. Yeah.
Could you get a monkey with a drum kit? And you also get the one that the majority picked, which I can't actually remember its name now. Like, its final evolution.
And Inteleon, it's supposed to be based on, like, James Bond and all that, because it's a sniper and all that.
Yeah, it literally becomes a sniper when it Gigantamaxes.
Apparently people were quite upset about that.
Why?
I don't know. Everything upsets everyone these days. I mean, I think it's because it was, like, a sniper and a sniper tower type thing.
I mean, in the last game, they gave you Emo Owl, Circus Afro, and
My Chemical Romance.
Internet Stream. Let's not get back into the Internet Stream.
God.
So it gave us some really good starters, and it gave us some really unique Pokemon that I think the games failed to give for a while.
Hmm.
Like, you had the... I forget what they're called. You had the... What's the region called again?
Galar?
Galar. You had the Galar variants, which, unlike the Alola variants, were pretty cool. Do you remember Alolan Meowth with the massive head? No, Alolan Persian, sorry.
I think I had one and called it Moonface.
Because it literally is a moonface.
So, to anyone who gets a reference...
But it had some interesting Pokemon. The legendaries were a bit broken in it. And not only that, I think it had one of the most unique... He's not even a bad guy. He had a vision how he was going to like enhance the Pokemon world and bring a future worth living in. But he looked at it the wrong way. He looked at what he could achieve, and he released what is considered basically like the ultimate Pokemon, which was end up going to destroy the world should it win. Then you and Hop team up with the legendaries to take it down. So it's you, Hop, and two legendaries fighting the ultimate Gigantamax, which in itself is a really cool end scenario, despite it being really easy.
Yeah.
But I don't care about the difficulty at that point, really.
No, I think at that point, the game's story carries you so far into it, you don't care that the battle's over far too quickly.
Yeah. You had the gyms, which were actually gyms. They were actual stadiums in this game.
Didn't you get to pick the number on your little football uniform?
Yeah. You wore like a football-esque uniform. It was, the gyms were trials. You went in with a group of people over a season, and by the end of the season, you only had the set number of people to pass and enter the Elite Four.
I just absolutely love the idea of it. It's creative.
What it does is, the Brits are quite patriotic with things like this, aren't they? With like football and theme.
We are
British stuff.
We're very passionate about football, as I've seen over the past few months.
And it took Britain's patrioticness in British things and put it in their Pokemon game. So it kind of, apart from not being able to match the weather, they managed to match our themes and our personalities really well in this game.
Except in this game, everyone has good teeth. Stereotype that we all have a terrible teeth, apparently.
I mean, they're not wrong. this game did have the plague of being too easy at points, though.
It's also very hand-holdy in that it does the, this move is super effective, this move is not very effective. And like I said, I know it's just a little nitpicky thing, but I wish you could turn it off. I don't like looking at it.
Yeah. It also featured the wild zone.
And that, we hadn't had anything like that before.
No, that was on another level of its own.
With the Dynamax dens.
I mean, Pokemon, this is the first game where Pokemon actually spawn in the overworld.
Which is a bit alarming when they started chasing you at insane speeds.
And then, let's get on to two of the main moments for me. I'll go over the lesser one first, which was actually the end, is Leon was the only fight in the game that actually posed a challenge. Like, Leon was such a jump up compared to everyone else you fought.
He was genuinely hard.
And he is the only trainer that actually had 6 Pokemon in this game. Which kind of sucked, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then we get onto the main moment, the main highlight for me. And that's fighting Hop to compete in the semifinals.
I think a lot led up to that moment is it. I don't know if that's how it was meant to be, but I kind of interpreted it as obviously Hop is Leon's little brother. And at points it starts to seem like Leon prefers you to Hop in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He just sees more potential in you as a trainer. And I think that really starts to wear Hop down after a while. And Hop's like a cheerful character, but that would hurt. Like, obviously your older brother is a champion and he's your idol. And yet he starts to see more potential in your friend over you. Wouldn't you find that a bit crushing?
Lily technically gets more development, but but it doesn't really count. She basically spends the entire game with you. Hop is his own character that builds his personality throughout the game on his own.
Mm.
His character develops from, I'm going to catch them all and be the champion, to who do I really want to be? And in the end, he ends up deciding to become the next Pokemon professor.
I love that. It's just such a good ending.
And then let's talk about the theme that he has for his final fight. It just is next level.
It jumps up.
It's the best theme in Pokemon, in my opinion.
It's really something.
And the people who shit all over him, you're terrible people. I'm just saying that now.
We like Hop here. Go away.
This is a Hop safe zone.
You can't sit with us if you don't like Hop.
So let's go over the bad points for this game. So in my opinion, the bad points are, I'm not going to count difficulty at this point, because at this point we've spent years with easier games. So the downfalls for me for this one is, while the graphics are a real jump up, I don't think they're as good as they could have been for this game. What are you going to say?
They were good, but they did make the game lag quite badly on occasion.
Yeah. We also ran into the issue of, because of what they were trying to do with the overworld, it made the rest of the game split areas really small. They fixed that with the DLCs, because you gained two more overworlds. But and
they're massive.
It's still, they dwarf the rest of the world. This is also the first game without a true, like, evil team or evil bad guy. And that's not a bad thing. It was quite fresh having the supposed antagonist only actually wanting to do good, just looking in the wrong direction for good.
Yeah.
Which I liked. But it was a bit of a downside, because there was no real actual bad guys. The only bad team were just bad because they were Marnie's fan club. Was she called Marnie?
I believe so. And they were an interesting bunch.
They were a fan club. That's the way to put it.
They're another aspect of the game where I saw them for the first time and I was just kind of lost for words.
And as said, Leon is the only real challenge of that game. And he's not that hard, really. I mean, when I did the Elite Four in this game, I actually did something that actually made it quite interesting. I went on the same, like, battle rules that they do, where they don't switch. It made some interesting fighting, actually. Like, by the time I did the no switching thing, it was 2-0 for Hop. Obviously, 2-1 for me, 0 for him. And when I came against Leon, I won with one Pokemon left. And I really like doing it that way, because it actually made it more of a challenge.
Yeah.
But the fact I needed to do that to make this game a challenge in the end, and the fact that you don't get the base cover legendaries until post-game. You get the legendary we didn't even know about before, the box cover legendaries.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm going to put mine at. What's your bad points?
The overworld / wild area does feel quite small now that I was sitting here and thinking about it. It doesn't take that long at all to get from one end to the other. I think for me, it's just mostly nitpicky stuff. Like, the game is really quite easy. It's very hand-holdy. It's hard to pick out specific things.
One thing I forgot to mention as well is, though I found this is a bit of a plague in these games, if you compare them to X and Y, is the clothing has never had the same quantity or matches to the same quality as the clothing you got in X and Y, does it?
It's quite limiting.
The clothes in this game were pretty good, but they didn't quite compare, did they?
No. I think part of that is also because Kalos was the first game where you really had that type of thing. But obviously, because it was Paris, you had to be fashionable. This is England. Everyone goes around in tracksuits. Tracksuits are our uniform. I can't believe I forgot to mention one of my other favourite characters, whose name is actually apparently pronounced Bede.
I like him.
I love his character.
His theme was also really good.
I actually cannot believe I forgot to mention him.
Hmm.
I like his storyline as well. And I do genuinely feel bad for him at a lot of points.
Yeah, but I mean, he ends up becoming one of the bloody gym leaders at the end of it.
Yeah. And I'm glad he's one of those characters who got a happy ending, but again, it's just like, I feel bad for this dude. He's a bitch, but I feel bad for him.
Right. So for me, this is a bit like Peril for me. It's probably a little bit biased, but I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I don't think the little things that annoy me compared to what this game gives you.
Yeah.
Especially in the expansions. It made Legendary Catching a bit aggravating because they were max raid dens.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I can't fault this game for anything it did.
No, it achieved a lot. And, well, it promised a lot, and it really did deliver. And now, I've written out our rankings, if you'd like me to read them out.
Okay, let's hear this.
Right. So, in 8th place, as you probably heard from our very harsh criticisms, we have a 6 out of 20, Alola.
Gen 7 was kind of the obvious one that was going to... I mean, I could tell before we even did this that like Gen 7 was going to flop.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
Next up, with a 13 out of 20, is Kalos. It's a shame, really, because that game could have been so much more.
Yeah, that did get a lower rating than I expected, but when you really do put it into perspective, it wasn't great, really.
No. As I said, aesthetics can't carry a game.
No.
Next up on the rating, and this pains me, but to be fair, Alex never really played it, so I couldn't have expected it to score that high. It's Johto.
Even if I did play it, I don't think it would be that high a rating for me. I'm sure I'll play it at some point.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure at best it would probably go up a 1 point for me.
Yeah. It did better than Kalos, though, ranking in at a 13.5 out of 20. Next up, at 14.5 out of 20, is Kanto. Feels a bit sacrilegious to put that one.
I know. I get what you mean. It is the OG. But it's the OG. Has the OG Pokemon, but things have moved on so much more than what the game gave you when it came out. And I know its gameplay has came a long way from there, but the game was gotta catch them all, and that's all you got.
Yeah. Shout out to this game for whenever anything used psychic, it gave me a headache. Because the screen would be all like wavy and black and white and flashing, and it was horrible. And also, rest in peace, Fat Pikachu. You will be missed. Pikachu used to be fat. And in 4th place, possibly surprising both of us, with a 15 out of 20, is Unova.
I know my ranking was going to be a 6 out of 10, but I decided to rank it a little bit higher just because it got shit on way too much for what it gave us.
Hmm.
But it really wasn't that bad of a game.
There's definitely room for improvement, but it was solid.
They could have improved it a lot, but it was solid for what we got.
I just, I'm hoping if they do a remake, they expand on end story more. That's all I can say.
Definitely.
And now we're into the top three. In third place, with a 16 out of 20, is Hoenn. Ruby and Sapphire were solid games.
I love that game. And I think we got to point out that apart from Gen 7, we adore all these games.
Yeah. Jury's still out on Alola.
These ratings do pay me a little bit, but we're given ratings on these. So at the end of the day, it is going to be mixed, isn't it?
I mean, I'm sure if Matt was here with us, the last final ratings would be different.
Yeah, I'm sure that these would mix up again, to be honest.
Mm. And like I said, Ruby and Sapphire were good, solid games. I think this sort of set like a new expectation for what Pokemon games should be.
Yes, definitely.
And in second place, with a 16.5 out of 20, Sinnoh.
That surprises me. That it didn't come first. I haven't been keeping track of the rating.
Galar got an almost perfect score. Galar got 18 out of 20.
I think that is a fair rating for it, to be fair.
Sinnoh's fantastic. Can't wait for the remix. That's all I've got to say on this one.
I think Galar really did give us a new level of Pokemon. From what they... It really showed what they can do with future games.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what comes next.
Yeah.
And as long as it's not Pokemon Unite 2.
Oh, God. And because I'll announce it anyway, in our top spot, we have Galar, Sword and Shield. So I think it's a well-deserved top spot.
So just a quick recap. What were they again? Just quickly, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
8th is Alola, 7th is Kalos, 6th Johto, 5 Kanto, 4 Unova, 3 Hoenn, 2 Sinnoh, and Galar is our champion currently. Maybe when the next gen comes out, the whole list will change and we'll do it again.
Yeah, when Gen 9 comes out, there's no reason why we couldn't do it again. Perhaps we'll get some replays of the older games by that point. And have Matt in there. And we should probably get Chris in, to be fair.
I was going
to
say that.
Pokemon. And then that would completely throw off these ratings with four of us.
So, look forward to that in the future. When the next gen comes out, there's going to be four of us doing this.
Yeah. And as said, this was just our opinions. I'm sure everyone has a different rating for all of this.
Everyone's ratings are good.
And obviously the people who put Gen 7 is the best, obviously they are wrong. But we won't get too much into that.
That's the only people who are wrong.
So that basically wraps up today. Kerry, where can people find you?
I'm Shirabeans on Twitter, where I consider posting things, but don't, because I'm generally scared of people. And because I'm going to plug it anyway, you should check out the Dungeon Junkies art Instagram. It's slow to fill up because art takes time, but you should check it out anyway. It's Dungeon Junkies on Instagram. Go there if you want to see the most adorable eldritch puppy you've ever seen. His name is Rupert.
And of course, you can find me at Spiderbread UK on Twitter. You can find this main show at Game Junkies Pod, and you can find this ever-growing collection of Dungeons & Dragons madness at Dungeon Junkies. And a side note, you can find Matt when he's not secretly working for the FBI at the Matt Attack UK. But without further ado, I'm Alex.
And I'm Kerry.
Somewhere is Matt, and we're out of here.
Bye.
This podcast is a Matt Attack production for Visionaries Global Media.